Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Could you do me a favor? Would you allow me to say that that the parents weren't $99.50, but could you just make it a straight $100? And I go, yeah, because at 90% off, whatever, 80% right. off, they're 20.
It's a negative transaction.
I got them right. for nothing.
Zero.
Free,
baby.
Zero.
Nice.
I have these pants for nothing. So I don't care how terrible they look.
Yeah, even if you got what you paid for.
I got them for nothing. And I told Mike, listen, he said, you're a crazy old man.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And indeed, my microphone, much better. I am a crazy old man. I'm at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest, about a block and a half, two blocks inside the line that demarks the state of Maryland from the capital of the United States of America. I'm very happily joined by the number one sports columnist in Washington, D.C., Barry Svrluga, and a freight train in John Hyland. And John Hyland brought his boy. His boy travels with him.
That's right.
You know, and is here to get stuff for Hyland. We're going to get to all of... There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff. This is a pop-up podcast with a certain amount of reason to it. Michael Kornheiser not here. Michael Kornheiser with his in-laws in Okotie, South Carolina, where I called him today and texted him and said, do not put Bootsy outside during the eclipse.
That's great advice.
Because they are within a couple of hours of Charleston, South Carolina.
That's right.
Where the eclipse was total, a total eclipse. Now, in Washington, D.C. this afternoon, and I got the glasses. Alyssa Crilly sent me a pair of glasses. Bonnie Burko had the glasses. I got the glasses. Let me just say this, because we're going to bring on Noah Petro from NASA, like the real deal NASA.
That's right, the real NASA.
And I got a bunch of questions, but I'm interested in Hyland. I'm interested in Svrluga on this. From 2 o'clock on, I'm looking outside the window. I got the glasses on. I'm in the sixth floor of the ABC News building facing DeSales Street.
Yep.
Okay? I'm told, put the glasses on, look down, then look up. The sun will be high up in the sky to the right. And I did watch a progression of covering of the sun from inside, of covering of the sun, to the point where at 2:47, which was the anointed time.
2:42, I thought.
Well, whatever it was, somewhere in the 2:40s, I could see that there was just about an eighth of the sun. An eighth of the sun. But, and here's to me, this is like the Blake Bortles of eclipses. Because I now look up the street the other way to 17th Street, where it is bright blue sky. And everywhere I look in the sky is bright blue sky. And I'm thinking, well, so what? So what have we got?
You need a path of totality.
What was your experience?
My experience was... I was
underwhelming.
At the Washington Post building at 13th and K. I walked onto a fifth floor deck without glasses. Quickly realized this was the wrong approach.
That's the wrong place.
Went home. My daughter was very excited about the entire thing, got glasses, saw the end of it, and kind of wished I had them, you know, a half an hour earlier.
But no, the glasses were very good to look at the sun. But
yes, but it wasn't dark. It was not dark.
Are you not bothered that the rest of the sky...
Wasn't bothered.
Is...
I got nothing for you on this. I came to Washington, D.C. to do some work, and so
yeah,
I was in an interview all afternoon.
So you missed it.
And the person I was interviewing looked up and said, oh, my God, I'm missing the total eclipse. Kids at home. I said, you're here. I'm buying you lunch. I'm doing an interview.
Right.
Shut up about the eclipse. You're in Washington. You're not going to miss anything. And from what you guys are saying, it doesn't sound like you missed very much.
No.
So I watched
a damn squib.
I watched on TV, and I saw in Kentucky and Missouri – in Salt Lake City, where your relatives were, booking every hotel. What did they book? How many
hotels? So my in-laws actually went to Idaho after flying to Salt Lake, had booked three different hotel rooms so that they could be covered in terms of, well, where's the cloud cover going to be? And they went to Weezer, Idaho, and texts would show they had a spectacular experience.
My sense of this is that most of the people who did this, They were doing it because the Grateful Dead no longer performs.
No, it's a scientific hobby for some people. Really? I mean, really, it's not some okay. hippie thing. It's a.
Well, I'm sure there were a lot of hippies there.
I don't doubt that.
If you were within, they stared straight at it.
If you were within about an hour's drive of a place where it was going to be, you were going to be right in the kill zone. You know, like really get a look at it. I would have driven an hour to go there.
Sure.
But like, you know, my wife's up in New York City. She's like, I'm going to watch the thing from the roof of our apartment. I'm like, you're not going to see anything. Like, what are you talking about?
The entire 17th Street is totally bright blue. You could play 5 baseball games.
Yeah. But you sound like somebody who expected totality from partiality, and I'm here to tell you, you can't get that.
What I expected was some sense that the animals would go wild because it was getting dark.
You wanted chaos.
And it didn't get dark. So
I'll tell you what
Petro,
I didn't expect. What I didn't expect was we were going to have a discussion here of partiality and totality. This is like we're in a metaphysical discussion
here. Yes, exactly.
Like back in my college joints after midnight conversations.
And now the NASA bullpen.
Jesus, what's that?
Noah Petro works for NASA. He's a good friend of Nigel's. He's a listener to this show.
That's right.
Noah, where are you physically right now?
I am in a car heading north from Salem, Oregon. Somewhere between Salem and Portland, there's about 10,000 of my closest friends in other cars. We're going at about 10 miles an hour, and we have for the last 45 minutes since we left Salem.
Okay, so you were in the band of Total Eclipse.
That's right, yeah. I was at a minor league baseball game in the bustling metropolis of Kaiser, Oregon, for the Salem-Kaiser Volcanoes Eclipse game.
Okay, and everybody got what they paid for, right? They got the Total Eclipse.
Yeah, as cloudless sky, we started the game about 9:45 after the visiting team didn't show up on time. So that's a baseball for you.
Okay.
And they started the game, played a half inning, and then delayed the game for the eclipse. And it was a beautiful show for about a minute and 45 seconds of totality.
So I envy that. Do you understand why I feel underwhelmed by what I saw in Washington?
Yeah, 80%. Of eclipse is, well, a friend of mine described seeing a partial eclipse like standing outside of a good restaurant like Chatter with the food smell coming out and not actually going inside. So hopefully in 2024, you'll get to go to the path of totality for the next one.
There's no way I make 2024. At my age, I don't make that. So Wrong. Here are some questions that are important. Everybody got spooked into putting on the glasses who wanted to see it. In fact, will people really go blind? What's going to happen to people who said, I'm going to look at it, I don't care, I'm a risk taker? What's going to happen, Noah?
If you actually, like some prominent politicians today, looked at the sun without
POTUS.
Solar eclipse-viewing glasses
for an extended
period of time, you could actually do some serious damage to your retina, especially if you're well outside the path of totality, like the nation's capital. So where it was 80%, if you looked at it, now, if you look at it for a second, that's not so bad. I mean, people do that all the time, but you're looking at it for extended periods of time. If you're trying to convince yourself, hey, I can actually stare at the sun and do it because your eye, the retinas do not have nerve endings. There's no pain sensation except that it's just very bright. So if you're staring at it for 20, 30, 40, a minute, you can actually do some permanent damage.
Has this happened in the past? Is there stuff on record with this?
Yeah, there's been a story circulating around about a kid in the 60s who was dared by a friend to stare at the eclipse, and he's had permanent blindness in the center of his eyes. There are some records of people who have participated in eclipses, like you suggested, under the influence of mind-altering drugs.
Freaks.
Who just stared at the eclipse for, many, many minutes, and that causes permanent blindness. So it's definitely something to take seriously. We at NASA tried to really drive home the point that people not only needed to get good solar viewing glasses, because there were some crummy ones out there,
right,
but also know not to to look at the sun unobscured. Now, when along the path of totality, in the moments before when the sun is, essentially at 1%, it's still bright, but you can actually still look at it then. So people at the game, we were telling them when to take the glasses off. But, it's definitely something not to trifle with, that's for sure.
So I told my son to keep Bootsy inside, because babies, when they lay on their backs, they just stare up at the sky. But I wonder, I also kept my dog inside. And I wonder about, I saw some piece the other day on how animals get completely nuts during this thing. They were saying that spiders began to undo their own webs during this, and elephants stampeded, and things went totally crazy. Is this true, Noah?
And then you changed the Disney Channel?
Yeah. I mean,
the only thing we saw, you know, we're at a baseball stadium, so there's not a lot of wildlife around, but apparently some folks did see some hawks settle in some trees nearby the stadium, and then when the eclipse passed by, they took off. They were, you know, animals will start doing their nighttime routine. They think it's nighttime. There were a lot of people worried about dogs looking, or animals, pets looking at the sun. How do I protect my pet from looking at the sun? And my answer to that was always that pets are smarter than we are. They're not going to stare at the sun even when it's not an eclipse. So people shouldn't have worried about that. But yeah, no, we definitely noticed some nighttime behavior in animals, bugs coming out, things like that.
When is the next one? 2024?
April 8th, 2024. Yep.
You're going to make that, Tony.
I don't think I'm going to make that.
You're going to make that. You're going to make that.
Is it going to go across America again? Because I would assume these things happen with regularity. They just don't happen necessarily across the United States.
So, yeah, the last time one crisscrossed the country was 99 years ago. And
I was in high school.
Yeah.
Senior in high school.
Yeah. You were at high school, right? Yeah. So, no, it was a... the next one will be 2024, and that actually path goes more north-south, Mexico through central Texas, right through Dallas, actually, up towards the Great Lakes, Cleveland.
Jerry Jones's wig will fall off. That will be completely crazy. So it's going to go through Texas and straight up to Minnesota? Will it go straight up?
No, it'll curve across through Ohio and the Buffalo, and then northern New York State. It'll just miss Binghamton, unfortunately.
Okay,
and then,
but it'll be in Buffalo? Like, will it be in Buffalo? Will it be Rochester?
Yeah, Rochester, Buffalo.
I'm going.
Fatality in that one.
I thought you were going to be dead.
Definitely.
Well, if I'm alive. Okay. Or else they can just ship my body like El Cid. They can put me on the top of a horse and pretend I'm like, all right, Noah, thank you. Travel safe when you get home, okay?
Will do. Thanks so much.
So the best takeaway of this whole thing is that Heilemann did not even look at the eclipse.
I just want to point out that there are certain activities that we are always told if we do them we'll go blind.
Right, that's right.
And in my experience, it's never been true.
Right.
And I have tested the proposition a lot. Okay, a lot. I have plenty good sight. I got glasses, but I'm not blind at all.
This is the thing I wondered about as well. I mean, you got totally frightened that if you just looked at it for a split second, and now the president looked directly at it for how long?
Of course he did.
For a quick
42
second.
42 minutes.
And then there were a bunch of people.
42 minutes.
Yeah,
42
just minutes. Quick 42, 43 minutes. Yeah. And the people were like, no, don't look. Oh, that's right.
It's a bigly eclipse.
They said, oh, yeah, it's Trump. Okay, go ahead and look. No problem. Go right ahead.
That's fantastic.
You can't stop him. He's going to do it.
But I would have been, like, how old is your daughter?
7.
Right, I'd be very worried about young kids. I would have kept them inside.
No, I mean, I think they are trained. If you tell a 7-year-old, like a bunch of rule followers, you have to have these glasses on or your eyes are going to burn out of your head.
And do you believe that? Do you actually believe
that?
No,
but you scare tactics with 7-year-olds work great.
Yeah, well, plus the glasses are cool and the kids like get a chance to wear glasses.
It's like a 3D movie.
It's like a Halloween costume.
So you haven't looked at the glasses at all?
I know.
Nigel,
I've seen
do you have
pictures
the
of the glasses? Yeah, I've seen pictures.
Put on the glasses.
Yes.
Because you now can't see your hand in front of your face.
Right. So when I tested them.
You can't see anything.
I'm like Ray Charles.
That's right.
Yeah. What's this?
Right. Barry just gave you the finger. Right.
But then when you look at
this is the point. You cannot see anything.
But when you looked at the sun, when you put these on today.
You could see it.
Yeah, it was perfect. I was like, oh, there it is.
But you can't make, let's say you go in to the eclipse glass business. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't seem like that's a profitable business.
No, and these are made out of paper.
Well, there hasn't been one there for 99 years, so if you're in that business, you're having some trouble.
Fantastic.
Some lean years.
We're going to get to a lot of things today. The next pop-up podcast, for those of you keeping your schedule, is probably going to be August 30th, which is a Wednesday evening. Katie Ledecky and her whole family will
be
here.
That's right. Yes.
I don't know if I will. But their whole
I'm going to be in D.C. that night. I'm coming by.
Why don't you come by and see Katie Ledecky? Because Katie Ledecky is, in fact, the greatest swimmer of all time.
Right.
Right?
Well.
But she could have to overtake
Phelps.
Yeah. But she's certainly the greatest female swimmer of all time.
She is going to be very swiftly the greatest female swimmer of all time.
Of all time. So we'll talk to her because she's a local girl for us. Okay. So we will take a break now. and Heilemann will talk at great length about stuff that has happened in the last week or so that's actually unbelievable. For a president.
Correct.
It's actually unbelievable. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Matt Zabrowski in Brooklyn, who writes, here's a song from a band I play with called Brother Josephus entitled Don't Give Up on Love. We're kind of New Orleans-flavored outfit with a Steely Dan twist. We've actually played D.C. a bunch of times at the Hamilton and the Ebbets Oyster Riot. I'm a longtime little and freelance touring drummer. I've always wanted to write into the show, but I lack the wit and hilarity of the other emailers. So I'm happy to share some of my music with you. Your pod, they always call it a pod, has been really a great source of happiness while I'm on the road, and I appreciate the variety of topics involved, even if I don't agree. Have a good one. That's very, very nice.
Very nice.
And at the end of the podcast tonight, you can hear the entire song. John Heilemann is very gracious to come to the show and is now an official regular, which makes me happy. And so we haven't been on, so I haven't been able to do this every day like I've wanted to do this. And I think the most overall question is, how much resonance, how much legs, how much lasting power does this whole Charlottesville thing have with the present presidential administration, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's a mistake to talk about it just in terms of the administration, although I'm happy to talk about it in terms of the administration. I mean, the reality is that I think it has a lot of legs in it, both as a huge, important, shocking, bone-chilling event for a lot of people in America. And, you know, we have events like this that happen every once in a while in the course of a presidential election or administration where it's a defining moment. It's Hurricane Katrina, and people, it changes the course of things, right? But this has more legs because I think it's going to keep happening. I mean, this was not, because of the way the president reacted to it, because of the nature of the coverage, because of the perverse incentives for the people involved, this was a win for them. The white nationalists, the neo-Nazis, the Klansmen, the people who are in Charlottesville, who are national villains here, think they had a great weekend that weekend. And so for the people who traveled from other places in Virginia, from North Carolina, from all over the South, from further points away, who came to that event, their view was it was a success by their terms. And so they will seek to replicate it, and they've been given a big, giant permission slip by the President of the United States to go and do it other places. And so I think that we'll see this again. Not didn't happen in Boston this weekend. People thought it might, although I'm not sure exactly why. But we will see this again a month from now, or 2 months from now, or 6 weeks from now, or whenever it is. And I don't think only once. So these forces have been at loose in American society for a long time. They never go away. They ebb and flow. And the question is, at given points in our culture, when are they ascendant? When are they in abeyance? Right now, they are still a tiny minority. But, you know, we saw a poll today that said 9% of people in the country in a national poll think that these neo-Nazi, white nationalist, skinhead, militia-oriented views are fine. That's 22 million people in the country.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. That's 9%. 9% isn't a majority. It's not a plurality. It's a small sliver of America on some level. But 22 million people who think it's okay. And then all you need is 50,000 to have violence and tragedy, and have those people who inflict the violence and tragedy think that is a win for them. So look, right now these forces are ascendant, they're loud, and they have someone in the White House who, in the terms of the way that he treated it in the first pass and then in the third pass, they look at him and say, he is telling us he's got our backs.
So when you make a public statement and you talk about, there are some good people mixed in with the, there are some bad people, but there are some good people mixed in. My immediate reaction is, if you're in a march and let's just say you wanted to protect a monument and you came only to protect a monument, but then you find yourself in a march with Nazis, you got to get out of the march.
Sean Hannity.
You got to get out of the march because you say, whoa, these are the Nazis.
You want to talk about fake news. Sean Hannity today on his radio show, where he spouts more egregious right-wing BS. I know this is a family-friendly podcast.
We don't curse on this one, yeah.
Today said 1%. of the people in Charlottesville were bad people. 1%. That's what he said. 1%. Okay. Sean Hannity is the president's favorite broadcaster, I will note. All right. So, yes, of course it's true. You can have a very interesting argument about Confederate statues and about whether they should come down, and the Barry Palfrey argument for whether that should happen. We could talk about it in the Hall of Statues up on the up on Capitol Hill right now, where an interesting debate is breaking out over that very matter. But yes, if you, for whatever reason, wanted to go and protest the statue, and then you showed up and found yourself in a march with people doing a Sieg Heil sign and chanting, "Jews will not replace us," holding tiki torches, armed in front of synagogues, you would say, "I'm in the wrong crowd here.
So I gotta go.
If I'm a good person, I'm in the wrong crowd. I got caught up in the wrong thing. I gotta get out of here," right? That's what a normal person who's a good person who maybe came there for misguided reasons would do if he found himself in that crowd. Those people, by and large, were people who were either activist instigators, bad, actively bad people, or people who were complicit in the badness because they got there, saw how bad it was, and were like, "Yeah, I'm fine with this. I'll join this march."
There's a wonderful piece.
I'm not holding the rope to do the lynching, but I see the guy with the rope,
right?
And I'm going to stand. I'm going to walk along with him. I'm going to walk right with him.
There's a piece, a front page piece yesterday in the Washington Post, about people going great distance, great length,
yes,
to join this march. Utterly unafraid of being outed, utterly unafraid of the cameras that are all around them.
The opposite.
Embracing it.
The opposite.
Embracing
the
it.
The opposite.
And so when people on television or people in print say these are lunatic fringe people, I go with what you said, that the 9% comes up at 22 million. And they're willing to be identified this way, which means there are more sympathetic people than that who are just unwilling to be identified this way. This is scary, and this is racial identity politics, which has been going on for a while in America, but
long as there's been the country.
How much, when you look at the next series of elections, when you look at the emboldened way these people go out there, how much of that scares you in terms of tearing apart the country?
I think that there's a it scares me a lot. The parties, the Republican Party. Look, you can argue the polarization is like the fundamental fact of our politics, right? The left is further left, the right's further right. That's true, but the way in which it's happened on the right is much, much more dramatic and much more fearsome. And we've seen the Republican Party become a party where the grassroots of it are much more radical and much less genuinely conservative than they've ever been, right? Most of the things that what constituted the mainstream of Republican thought in the Reagan era or the first Bush era or even really in George W. Bush's era, those views are now considered liberal views,
yes,
by
yes.
people in the Republican Party. Those people are rhinos to the Republican base now. The Republican base now is not a conservative base. It's a radical populist base built on grievance. And the grievances are of various kinds. There's economic grievances against the royalists and the bankers and the Fortune 500 and the media, for sure. And then there's racial grievance. And sometimes they're bound up together, the economic and the racial. But the racial grievance portion of the Republican Party has been catering to it off and on since the Southern Strategy with Richard Nixon back in 1968, 1972. But it's front and center now. It elected a president to a large extent. And so at least this next election around, when you have a president who his base is now less of a base, as Peggy Noonan said this weekend, than a core. It's, he's down now close to 30, right? It's going to drop more than that if he doesn't get anything done over the next few months. He's now got Steve Bannon outside at Breitbart, which is a media organization built to challenge Fox News to define what the new Republican conservative movement is, which is this anger, grievance, nationalism, xenophobia, based on white identity politics. That is one of the biggest media megaphones in the country, and the guy who was formerly the most powerful person in the White House, besides Donald Trump, is now back running that media organization with a purpose of, I'm going to hold this administration to the fire. I'm going to try to keep this president honest and keep reminding him of who are these people who engineered this victory for him that was totally improbable and that he thinks is the most extraordinary thing that's ever happened in the history of politics. Donald Trump is not going to abandon those people. They are going to be at the core of what he tries to get reelected on the basis of. So at least in 2020, It's going to be in the front and center of our politics. The debate over this, the arguments around it, the anger, the division, the passion, all of that, for at least this cycle, this is what we're going to be dealing with.
So maybe I'm tremendously naive, and I've lived a long time, and I deluded myself into thinking that things were getting better in the country. But everything that you're describing now feels like European politics to me. Feels like, you know, the Le Pens in France or all of these people who come out and they say essentially the most important thing is how you define yourself racially and culturally, and everybody who you don't like is bad.
Anti-melting pot politics.
Yes.
But Le Pen
and
lost.
And in this country, that seems to be potentially the worst upheaval ever.
Well, it's bad. I mean, look, we had a civil war, and so yes. I don't want to say ever. It's bad. It's bad. And look, I mean, the irony of it. I think if you had President Obama here, he would say, if he were being honest, and if we got him drunk enough or put him on sodium pentothal, he would say that, you know, part of what happened in his time in office was the perception was that his election was a great blow for racial equality. And for the notion of egalitarian race blindness, right, or whatever, but that what his election actually did was just tear this big scab off of a lot of festering anger among a certain segment of society who suddenly became emboldened to come out. And it's not that those people didn't exist before.
But
now opposition politics to Obama, those people were able to come in and there was a cause. Whether you were a mainstream Republican who wanted to beat Obama just because he was a Democrat, but suddenly it was anti-Obama is the thing, which was like opening the doors to a bunch of people who had all of these grievances and were able to now come out and feel free to say this nasty stuff. And it has created the combination, that admixture of what Obama, he didn't obviously do this intentionally, but you're saying the unintended consequence of Obama, then followed by Trump and the people around him exploiting it, has created a really dangerous, really volatile situation for not just for our politics, but for our civil society.
Is it not unbelievably ironic that Donald Trump, a billionaire who spent his whole life, you know, in a 10-block area of either Queens or Manhattan, that he's the one they rally around?
It is, were it not for the fact that so many of the things he says are things that are either direct or coded appeals to their sense of grievance.
These are the dog whistles.
And the whole blue collar billionaire thing is one of those things that I find baffling. Like that, just the concept of it is like beyond my ability to really reckon with. But it is something that when we in 2016. When we would go around and do focus groups all over the country, you talk to people in New Hampshire and Iowa, average working people, the number of them who would say, he's one of us. And you would say, well, what do you mean he's one of us? Like, do you have a private jet? Do you live in a triplex on Fifth Avenue? No, I understand he's richer than me, but he understands what we're angry about. He understands the way we've been screwed, and he's willing to say things that I have wanted always to be able to say, and political correctness has kept me from saying, and he says those things out loud, and that makes him one of us.
This is the obvious question. Is this going to get worse before it gets better?
I think so.
Yeah, that's...
I think so.
That's the scary...
That's the answer.
I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, and I think for the reasons I said, I don't think this goes away. I think it gets inflamed. I think it gets emboldened. And I think the only way for it to get better is for someone who's so tolerant of this kind of, at this extreme, someone who's so tolerant of it, who sees two sides to the issue in Charlottesville, is for that person not to be president. It can't get better. Because he, again, I say this not in a partisan way, he's not going to change. Right. All fantasies about Donald Trump changing are fantasies. He's not going to change. And he does. There's nothing more could be clearer now. The way he addressed it that first day was how he really felt. He got forced to address it in a politically correct way the next time and was angry at that. And so the next day came out and was like, I want to talk about what I really think about this. Right. We know his heart on this now. It's not going to change. And so with that kind of permission structure from the most powerful person with the loudest megaphone in the country, these groups will be emboldened. These people will be emboldened until someone comes along and through the power of democracy says, no, that's not all right.
The whole theory of the United States is the melting pot theory. Everybody read that went to college and studied political science, read the Moynihan book. Yeah. And then that's all of it. It's the Emma Lazarus poem. It's what makes us different than all of these other countries that are based on how you look and what you worship. We're different, but maybe we're not. Well, but maybe we're not.
Look, race, identity, culture, ethnicity are powerful in every society. They are. The difference is in this one is that the civic institutions were built in order to say that's secondary. And at least in our public life,
yes,
it's going to be of secondary importance. And these ideas are more important than those more visceral impulses. Right now, the people who are presiding over the public institutions are catering to the visceral impulses rather than catering to the better angels. And that's why I say it's not that all societies are groping with these things. The question is, how strong is your politics? How strong is your democratic tradition? How big are the ideas? How much fealty do we have to them? And how much do the people who lead us say to us over and over again, these ideas are more important than these things that are deep and dark in your heart? Right now, we don't have people at the top of our government who are saying, those are deep and dark things in your heart and we have to aspire to something better. They say, I see both sides of this issue.
Thank you, Joe. It's a freight train coming through. We will take a break. We will have news when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is theupside.com ad. Like I've been telling you for a while, if you travel for business, stop wasting time pricing your flights and hotels at the same old sites you used to go to. The only site you need is upside.com. It's quick and it's easy for Upside to show you the exact flights you're looking for and the big-name hotels you want to stay at. You can buy them separately or bundle them together. You can even add a ride. And by bundling two or more selections, you will experience the real magic of using Upside. The more you bundle, the more you save, the bigger the gift card. See, this is the payoff, the gift card. The bigger the gift card you receive to places like Amazon.com every time you buy a business travel package using Upside. And their expert navigators are always available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, through phone, chat, social, and email to help anytime before, during, and after your business trip to make sure that it goes smoothly. It's the concierge level of service that you want. You get the VIP treatment while still paying low prices and being rewarded with gift cards every time you book. Oh, and you keep your airline miles too. Upside is the real deal for buying your business trips. You've got to give them a try. And right now, when you use the promo code TONY, you're guaranteed to get at least a $100 Amazon gift card on your package purchase. That's the code TONY, $100 free.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, it's $100 free.
It's not as good as free pants, but it's a good deal.
Well, I had to negotiate on the free pants. Upside.com, the better way to buy business travel. A minimum purchase is required. See the site, UPSIDE, not just UPS, that's something different, UPSIDE. See the site for complete details.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Jack sends this in and he says, I wanted to share with you a song and video of said song. You must have the video, Nigel.
Yes.
That is written and performed by the person to whom I'm related by marriage. Her name is Stephanie Jack. She's got a Kickstarter going to try to raise money to do her first album. I'm really proud of her. I wanted to see if you would be so kind as to help share her art with the world, at least with all of the littles. This is called Take My Hand.
Yes,
very lovely.
And I got an email from Stephanie who said actually the Kickstarter campaign was a success and shows she is proceeding with the new album.
Kickstarter is what?
Basically, it's like crowdfunding.
Yes, for money. And
yeah. It's like you're putting your hat out on the internet, basically. Opening up your violin case
Would you do that?
Yeah. Online busking.
For the right thing.
Would you do it? I wouldn't do it. It's like, you know what I wouldn't
do? You don't have to do
it. Let me tell you what I wouldn't do.
It's not compulsory.
I would not hold a yard sale.
No, you would not.
I would not hold a yard
sale.
You
know what? I'll tell you something. If you held a yard sale, I would come.
I was just going to say, used Tony Kornheiser merchandise.
Kornheiser garage? I would rummage through that thing and pay a lot of money to see some of that stuff.
Jesse's old dog bowls?
I could not do it.
Too embarrassing?
It's just too much.
Or seems too needy.
It's just like,
embarrassing.
I don't want people
grubbing through your stuff.
I just don't. I'd rather give it away a lot. I just give it away. I can't see selling it. Maybe I'm crazy to do that, but I can't see Sana. You have news, Nigel?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. We will start off with the passing, Melancholy At Me Trails, to one of the biggest entertainers in American history. Certainly in the mid-20th century,
well,
he was as big as it gets. And I'm talking about Jerry Lewis, who passed away this...
91.
91, yes.
So here's the thing on Jerry Lewis, because I'm the oldest person here, and I'm the oldest person here by a lot. So most
confidence.
People who are in... their 30s and 40s, if they have any passing knowledge of Jerry Lewis, it's because of the muscular dystrophy
telethon
sure. which yeah. he did every Labor Day
yes.
for 40 years. And there is some controversy about that. Everybody always wanted to know, why did he do it? Was there somebody in his family? He was I don't know how you can be criticized for it, but he was criticized for it. But if you're my age, you remember Jerry Lewis in an entirely different way. When Jerry Lewis, and I know this is going to sound foolish to anybody really under the age of 60, but when Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin were together, and they were unbelievably large entertainers, that everything they did was a hit. Now, there's 50, 80, 100 channels. So the most you're going to get is 4, 8, 10 million people watching you. But in an era when there's 3 channels, when Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin are on, if they do a guest shot, 70% of the available audience is watching them. 70%. So even if there's more people now, that's still 50, 60, 70 million people watching this. You're too young. You can't conceive of this. It's bigger than the Beatles.
Did they dance next to each other or anything? Because that makes me uncomfortable.
They did. They did very, very physical comedy.
Yeah.
I won't even tell you it was funny, although yeah. Jerry Lewis, when he would just go, lady,
right, yeah.
people would start to laugh. When they broke up, this was much bigger than Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie breaking up.
Yeah,
bigger
huge.
Than Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds breaking up. Yeah. This is like the biggest thing in all of entertainment in the late 50s or early 60s. Now, I think Dean Martin went on to have a bigger career, but I will tell you that there was one time...
Certainly a cooler career.
Yeah, much cooler.
Like, you know, they wouldn't let Jerry Lewis in the Rat Pack. That's the thing.
That's true. And here's, I will refute that.
They let Jerry Lee Lewis into the Rat Pack, but not Jerry
Lewis. Refute that in this regard, because I watched every year. Yeah. I watched the telethon yeah. every single year. And one year in the 70s, how this happened, because Frank Sinatra was bigger than both of them. Frank Sinatra and Elvis Presley were the two largest people in the history of American entertainment. Bigger than Michael Jackson, bigger than anybody. Frank Sinatra, Elvis Presley. Jerry Lewis at the telethon brings Frank Sinatra out. This is a telethon. It's probably 2 a.m. Frank Sinatra comes out, sings a song. Jerry Lewis always had an orchestra there. And then Jerry says, Frank, this is so great. Thank you so very, very much. And he says, I got a pal of yours. I'm going to bring him out. He brings out Dean Martin. So at that point, people, if you have telephones, not cell phones, real telephones, you're calling people up saying, get on this. Get on Channel 5.
They had not spoken in like decades.
15 or, years. Yeah,
you're calling
years.
The center of town to have the woman connect you to the other
to
five.
To everybody.
Right?
Maybe. That's how big they were. I mean, Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin were absolutely enormous. And then he spent the rest of his career telling you how great he was, which got to be annoying. There was a period of time. You are old enough, both of you, to remember Johnny Carson, yes?
Yes.
You can remember Johnny Carson.
Of course. Yes.
Well, do you remember Jack Parr? When Jack Parr left The Tonight Show, there were a series of people who took over a week at a time,
yeah.
much like at the Dan Le Batard Show in the attempt to replace Bomani Jones, of course.
Right.
Jerry Lewis did it for a week. His ratings were so high, they asked him to do it for another week and another week and another week. He did it for a full month. He got higher ratings than anybody had in the history of television.
Well, and you know, when they broke up, Lewis and Martin, it was Lewis who got the deal, one of the great Hollywood deals ever. They gave him a 10-picture deal where he was the writer, director, producer, and star of about 10 movies in a row where they were paying him like $10 million a year. In like 1958, 1959,
yeah.
which was like a lot
money.
Of dough.
Unbelievable
right.
money. And that
days.
Led to everybody thinking he was a megalomaniac, because he was.
Right.
Because he actually was. He thought he was better than everyone at everything. From everything I've read, it seems like he did the breaking up.
Yeah.
But Dean Martin's career was fantastic.
Right. It was,
the other thing that you got to say about Jerry Lewis is he made one of the greatest, I mean, just, if you think about the model for a washed-up star in the late phase of his career, when he made King of Comedy.
Which is a great movie.
With De Niro. It's just
with
it's
Sandra
a
Bernhardt.
It's an incredible movie.
It's a great unknown, and it is a movie that will make your skin crawl.
Rupert Pupkin
yes.
is all I can say.
It'll make you
on this podcast. I want to be the first one ever to say Rupert Pupkin on this
King
podcast.
King of Comedy is great. Did you see
it? Yes, absolutely.
Oh my God,
fantastic movie. So I just wanted to wrap
Ducklow,
up.
Ducklow, have you seen King of Comedy? Okay, come on, man.
Get on a microphone. Say no so the people of America can hear you.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to see it.
Come on, Ducklow. If you don't see that movie in the next 4 days, you're fired.
Yeah, you have to see the movie. It's a great movie. What else?
Roger Goodell. He's doing such a good job that the NFL says, you know what, we're going to give you a five-year extension a couple of years before your contract even expires. So I guess the estimates are that he's making somewhere about $35 million
a year. $30 million a year.
They estimate that he's made $212 million in the first 10 years as commissioner. Right. So he's doing quite well.
I'd like to interview you two sports guys about this, all right? Okay, I mean, I'm, as you know, a big sports fan, but you guys are the experts, all right? I want to ask both of you.
Well, Barry's a working sports guy. This is important.
I want to ask both of you guys this question, though. What has Roger Goodell done? I mean, really done that merits not just a new contract, but that amount of money. I'm open to being convinced.
Think of it this way. I believe he has doubled the revenue of the league in his time as commissioner.
He's done that?
Well, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. I believe the revenue of the league has doubled in his time of commissioner. So we can order it at however you want. It's financial semantics.
Yeah.
If there are 32 NFL teams, if he's making $32 million a year and his employers are the owners, $1 million a year per team for this guy is nothing. It is nothing. I mean, it does not matter.
If you take the position that anybody could have done this, then there's nothing we can say that can convince you that Roger Goodell had a hand in it.
Right.
And it's very possible that anybody could have done this. But their growth has been fabulous. And by the way, they see that their growth is going to go down because no one's playing football anymore.
But is that a position you can take? I don't know. Like, would you argue that anyone could have done it? Or
no. Not anyone.
And I think...
Not
I,
anyone.
I think okay. what he...
Some, but he did it. He was there for it. He presided over it. And the other part that's important here is that the owners, every time he goes out in public, he gets booed. Every single time. Right. He gets everything wrong.
So he's like the whipping boy.
The owners say to themselves, well, we're not getting booed.
Right, right.
We're not. And if he's willing to do this, and it costs us each $1 million.
1,000%.
So what?
All good.
So what?
So who's a greater commissioner historically, Goodell or Tagliabue? What's the argument there?
Roselle is the greatest.
That's like the founding commissioner, right? Like the commissioner who made the league.
Tagliabue, they got to 32 before
Goodell.
Goodell. Yeah. Getting to 32 and being that solvent is great.
Has the NFL ever been more king of the landscape? And I understand there are fissures because of concussions and because of long-term health issues, and I don't think we're going to be having the same conversation in 10 years. But over the last 5 years, for the modern consumer, it is the best product to consume in terms of how much time it takes, in terms of your emotional and financial energy that you put into it. It fits the schedule better. It fits your own personal life better. If you remove, and I think most fans do remove, the long-term health issues with the fans...
They don't care.
I mean, I'm sorry, with the players, then, I think $35 million bucks is not that much for that guy.
All right.
Which is not saying I think he's like, you know, some altruistic
beacon.
And by the
way, he gets
like,
everything wrong.
The Ray Rice
correct.
Thing?
He got Ray Rice wrong.
But that Brady, doesn't matter.
Forget about
it. He got Brady wrong. Yeah, okay. Greg Hardy wrong. Yeah. Ezekiel Elliott wrong.
He's gotten everything wrong.
Everything. He hasn't got anything right.
Can somebody give me a job where I can get everything wrong and get paid that kind of dough?
Weatherman.
Weatherman. Like right.
Weatherman.
Okay, all right.
You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind.
Oh, I'd be a crappy weatherman.
That would be good. You'd be on forever.
I'd be fine.
What do you got?
Speaking of lots of money, will you be buying a Powerball ticket at any point?
No.
Between today and tomorrow?
No.
You know what the payout will be?
How much?
About $650 million.
I'm buying one right after this podcast.
There you go.
And
if you live in the District of Columbia, which I believe you do, Mr. Tony, if you took the lump sum, you would walk away with...
You always take the lump sum.
$273 million. Or after 30, I guess it would be 30 years of payments.
Can you imagine how many orange pants I can buy with $273
million? When you're getting it for free, you know.
Yeah. Some smokers,
30
some
years of payments
pants.
Is what?
30 years of payments would be,
I'm not old enough.
I guess,
I can't live 30.
$14 million. I think that's what they're saying.
A year.
$14 million a year.
Yes.
Yeah. Take the lump. You always take the
lump
sum.
Sum.
Yes.
You can be dead tomorrow. You can be dead. Yeah,
the lump sum.
Every time. Every time.
Yeah.
Mr. Tony, I know you were keeping an eye on this. The Solheim Cup, which the Americans came back, I guess, rallied to win.
Well, they didn't know. They were ahead all the way. They were ahead. It's golf. It's team golf.
Yes.
And I'll yield to Barry on this because I don't think you, John, you don't care about golf that much, do you?
I couldn't care yeah, less. Right. I'm thinking about it. The only reason I said they rallied is
it says they rallied from four holes down.
No. I want to set this up for Barry because I'm very curious about this. If you, and God knows most people don't, but if you were to watch any LPGA event at any time during the year in any locale in the United States of America, you will watch entire holes where nobody, I don't mean like 10 people, where nobody is there. Except the person, except the golfers, the caddies, and the woman carrying the board
that
says where they are. Nobody is there. At this event in Des Moines, Iowa, 50, 60,000 yes. people were there, and I watched this thing. Why did I watch
this? You watch it because you're a golf fan, and I think John is never going to watch a hole of
but
this.
I watched it over the PGA tournament.
I don't, because it's a much more interesting format. When there's camaraderie in golf, which is the ultimate in, I'm in my own cubicle sporting event, it just is such a different element that I don't think it really appeals to people who are not golf fans.
I understand that. Golf
fans, it is extremely appealing. I love that stuff. I've always loved that stuff. The Ryder Cup, I think, is the best event in golf, right?
Great.
I mean, it's like jingoistic. It's like, I mean,
how long has this event been going on? Like, I've heard the Ryder Cup. I'm really familiar with, and all the I'm plenty of observer of golf. I've never even heard of
the Solheim Club. The club manufacturer, Carsten Solheim, who invented the company Ping.
Yeah.
Had a great support of women's golf and the women's game. And once the Ryder Cup in the late 80s and early 90s started to develop and get, it used to be trouncing for the Americans all the time, it started to get really competitive. And so he essentially invented this thing out of straw, and it's sustained itself. The Americans have in general been the winners, but there's been great European stars in Annika Sorenstam who happened this year. Yeah, it's fun to watch.
An interesting thing happened when I was watching it, and you mentioned Ping. Ping did an ad, a full minute, maybe a minute and a half ad, on a driver that they were building. And they were not, it was only the technology of the driver. You did not see a man hit the driver. You did not see a woman hit the driver. It was specifically on an event that more women would watch than men, but they didn't put a woman out there. And my feeling was that they did this to not be gender specific, in the hopes that, you know, that anybody would buy it. Because if you put a man out there, the women wouldn't have bought it, and vice versa.
Well, right, and vice versa. They knew that you, as a male golf fan, might be tuning in and find this much more compelling than the PGA Tour at the Wyndham Championship or whatever,
which was nothing.
Right,
where everybody was shooting 18 under. What do you got?
That's it.
That's it?
That's it.
Wasn't there some shot from that Solheim thing with some lady holding a styrofoam cup that said vodka tonic on the side of it? Did you see that?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, well, there was some.
That would be good.
There was a social media sensation where one of the players, or one of the coaches, I don't know, but was holding a styrofoam cup, and you could read on the side vodka tonic as she was drinking it along the fairway.
Yeah, it was Julie Engster, the captain.
She's the captain of the American legend.
Oh, she's cool. Yeah.
She's a great talker.
And she's drinking a vodka tonic.
Well, she was coasting to victory at that point.
I love that.
I will say this. She's
the head pro. She was the touring pro at Pasatiempo.
Oh, which is a great
course,
right?
In Northern California. It's a great course.
Yeah.
Great course. And public.
Yes.
Public course. Great course.
I will just say this. There was a story I wanted to do for you. It was a video of people at a barbecue and a hawk right by a lake, and a hawk comes by, swoops down, and picks something up. You don't see what it is. And it circles around.
Mouse?
No, and it turns out it's a snake, and the hawk flies right in and drops the snake right on the people, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, this is the scariest thing I've ever seen. Turns out it was a hoax. It was all, you know, rigged.
How do you rig that? You train the hawk and the snake?
No, I think it was just CGI or something like that. They made the video.
So it's wrong with the internet.
Yes.
Fraud.
Exactly.
It's a fraud. All right, we're going to come back with Old Guy Radio, right?
That's right.
Old Guy Radio, when we return, I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
So this is the Simply Safe ad. We've not done this ad, to my knowledge.
So no, we've not.
I'm going to be reading for the first time. Thousands of people seeking home security get ripped off every day. And the home security industry wants you to believe it's your only option. They've got hordes of salesmen out there trying to scare you into signing one of their long-term contracts. You get stuck writing huge checks month after month with no way out. It's robbery by contract, and it costs you thousands. But there's a better way to protect your home. Simply Safe Home Security, spelled S-I-M-P-L-I-S-A-F-E. It has no contracts, none. You get award-winning 24/7 protection, named the best in the industry. There are security professionals watching, ready to instantly send the police. I can imagine this. There's a giant board somewhere, and they're all looking in on your house. And it's just $14.99 a month. That's less than half of what most companies charge. Protect your home the smart way. Visit simplysafe.com/Tony. And I'll be identified as somebody robbing your house, I assume.
That's right.
SimplySafe.com/Tony now to save $100. Well, save $100. Don't miss out. The sale ends soon. That's only at SimplySafe.com/Tony. Go to SimplySafe.com/Tony. Should we do this?
Sure.
Why don't you do this? Why don't you go to it?
I will do that.
And tell me what the people look like who monitor your home.
I will do that.
Because I think that would be fun. That's a
I'll
job.
Need some new
you
friends.
Know what? Colleges are turning out far too many communications majors.
Yes, they are.
And they can't get jobs.
Right.
Here's a job you can get. Simply Safe.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Of course, on the day of the total eclipse, of course, old guy radio would be total eclipse of the heart. But this is not the Bonnie Tyler one. This is from old school. What do they call this play? Dance band?
The dance band, yes.
Yeah. It's just when they curse wildly. And when you watch it, you go, what? What are you saying? This song is written by Jimmy Steinman, George W. Hewlett High School. And then Will Ferrell looks around at this.
They're like, what?
What? Right. So, Nigel suggests to me that we're going to do, you know, because the podcast is going to happen on the eclipse day, that we should do Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart. And I say, fine, because it's written by my high school classmate, Jimmy Steinman. And then 20 seconds ago, before we go on, I just said, and I have a Jimmy Steinman story for you. Go ahead, knock yourself out.
Right, so now
do you have it.
Do you know Jimmy well?
Well, we used to eat at Hamburger Local for lunch, I don't know, every day for years. But go ahead, please tell me this.
All right, so this is according to Wikipedia, which we know is always
Wikipedia,
right.
Yeah.
Said in an interview with Playbill, with Total Eclipse of the Heart, I was trying to come up with a love song, and I remember I actually wrote that to be a vampire love song.
Yes.
Its original title was Vampires in Love, because I was working a musical of Nosferatu, the other great vampire story. And if anyone listens to the lyrics, they're really like vampire lines. It's all about the darkness, the power of darkness, and love's place.
He had a Broadway show on vampires that didn't do particularly well. Do you know what he's doing now, Jimmy Steinman?
No, I do not.
Okay, there's going to be, hopefully for him, a musical on Broadway entitled Bat Out of Hell, which will combine the Bat Out of Hell songs
Meatloaf?
With the legend of Peter Pan. Yes, it's going to be The Lost Boys and Bat Out of Hell. It has opened already in England to apparently very good reviews.
Wow.
And is being worked on all the time. Now, who wouldn't go to see that, the Bat Out of Hell music?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Now, you can't get...
Now, that's a weird combination.
Yeah. Well, that's what... He's obsessed with vampires... Peter Pan.
Weird, yes, it's obsessed with. Weird but compelling.
Yeah.
Yes.
You'd go, wouldn't you?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, of course...
Opening night.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to go opening night.
Yeah.
Steinman hasn't returned my calls in a while, but you never know. All right, so now I want to talk to Barry, obviously, about the Nats, because I always want to talk about the Nats, but I want to talk about something that happened in my life on Friday morning. On Friday, maybe Thursday morning or Friday morning, I did something that people do. They go to the dry cleaner.
Yep.
Okay, I have about 30 shirts. And when I finish them, when I went to finish 15 are in the dry cleaner. I finish 15, I go to the dry cleaner, I get the other 15 back. It's the same thing with pants.
Sure.
You don't get them all back at the same time. It's insane, because what do you do in the days when they're cleaning them? But I don't know about you, John, or you, Barry, but the dry cleaner for me, I've gone to the same dry cleaner for over 30 years. I go to a dry cleaner, Regal Custom Cleaner. It's on Wisconsin Avenue, and I go there, and it's a great little triumvirate, because my bank is across the street, and I'm one of those guys who still goes to the bank.
I love seeing you there.
And the CVS is right there, too. These are three things that people my age need.
You're like in a little Richard Scarry book.
Yeah.
Like, there's the pharmacist, yeah. And there's
You need the drugstore, you need the dry cleaner, you need the bank.
Yep.
I walk in, there's a sign that says, we're closing.
Whoa.
We're closing. August 31st, we're done. Who's taking it over? Politics and Prose.
Oh, your favorite.
Now, how am I supposed to deal with that? I can't be anti-bookstore. I'm not anti-bookstore. I'm pro-bookstore, even if I don't get along that well with the people who own it.
Right.
But...
Wow, there's a story there that I think I'd like to hear. Yeah, go on.
There's a story there.
But there's... But... Yeah. I'm very pro politics and prose because look at what they do for people who write books. They're great, but they're taking over my dry cleaner. Now, I don't want to get another dry cleaner. I don't know how. Did this ever happen to you? Something near and dear to your heart as you got older closed and you were dislocated. You didn't know what to do.
Oh my God. It's the most horrible thing in the world. It's like, you know, I mean, we are as we age, we become more and more set in our ways. And when they take away one of your mainstays, you know, the pizza place.
This is a bedrock thing, a dry cleaner.
Oh my God! It's a gut punch.
It's closing in 10 days.
You're screwed. You're going to be in dirty clothes for maybe the rest of your
life.
I'm
going to pick up all of my clothes, and then I'm going to have too many clothes. Yeah. Far too many clothes. Yeah. Anything like this happen to you?
Well, I would say residents of Capitol Hill.
I'm not leaving my house to buy another house. I have two houses in a block.
Residents of Capitol Hill and in the nation's capital, Frager's Hardware was a bedrock of the community for years and years and years. About 5 years ago, I was at Nats Park and looked out the press box window, and Frager's was burning down. You could see the plumes of smoke. And for a while there, it was like, well, wait, what? Where am I going to get a nail? I need a single nail. This was a problem.
Did they restore it?
They have not restored it to the original location. It has bounced around the hill a little bit. It is people wear Frager's T-shirts across the world and take their pictures and have them set back. But it's a big deal when that is snatched from you.
Okay, but in that particular case, did you build a little trip around, see, I build trips around this particular block.
I understand.
Almost everything I need. And then it's only a half a mile up to the refugee Safeway, and then I'm done for the day the week.
Is it really the case that between the dry cleaner, the drugstore, and the bank, that's pretty much all you need?
And the refugee Safeway.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know what else. What else would I need?
That's a real old guy sentiment, right?
Yes,
there.
It is.
Like the drugstore, CVS basically has all your needs covered.
Well, just about.
Yeah, doesn't it just play into your grand scheme of eventually moving to the Mayflower,
where you can just small grid, the very very small grid? What happened to you? What happened in your life that you missed it, and how did you replace it?
Well, it's weird. I've had a million of these things happen. But, you know, the thing about New York City, where I've lived for the last 15 years at least, is that, you know, there's a constant churn.
There's another
one. Oh, yes.
There's a constant churn. And so, you know, the pizza place, the best Neapolitan pizza place closes. But, you know, within 6 months, another one pops up and they deliver. That's the thing about New York.
I'm
thinking about dry cleaning is that, like, I've been going to the same dry cleaner for a decade in New York, but they come to my house.
They come to the apartment, they go away. I don't trust it. I feel they won't have all the clothes that I give them.
Yeah.
I want a dry cleaner where the cleaning plant is on premises.
Yeah, that's how mine is.
I don't want them shipping me. I'm not going to Zips. If Zips ships it out to somewhere else,
I don't know that they do. I agree with that, but would you really object if you could find a place that did the cleaning on premises? If they delivered, they brought it to your house,
that'd
and
be okay.
Yourself,
and I'd
that'd
be willing
okay,
to,
right?
I'd be willing to tip. I'd yeah. be willing to yeah. tarp excessively.
Parkway dry cleaners on Connecticut.
How far down?
North of the circle. North of.
Oh, all the way up. Past Columbia. Yeah, no. You can't. That's too far. And you get into
they
real
do a
traffic
remarkable
then.
Job. Yeah, you do get
real
into,
traffic then.
Can I make another suggestion?
Yeah.
Maybe
just throw the clothes out.
Well, you could do that.
I was going to say that.
Right, yeah. You do the Great Gatsby, just throw them out as soon as you wear
them. I once went to the Olympics, the Olympics in Norway.
Right.
The Olympics in Lillehammer.
The Lillehammer jacket, right.
Where it costs so much to use the cleaning service in Lillehammer.
It's cheaper to just buy
bought
clothes.
New. Everybody bought new.
Yep.
Just left the stuff there and bought new.
Have you considered purchasing your own dry cleaning establishment?
I don't want to do that. I got this. I'm going down the drain with chatter. I don't want to do that. You can, because what you're saying is interesting about the pizza, but you can find substitute foods.
Yeah.
But a dry cleaner, you establish a relationship. Man, I don't even know the people in there. It's the locale, everything about it.
Dry cleaners are tough, and I find this is not just so much about things that close, but it's like if you move, and as you've observed, I've moved around a lot.
Yes.
So one of the key things when you move to a new neighborhood is, that's like one of the key things to solve.
Find what you need.
The dry cleaner in particular.
Correct.
Because the ratio of bad ones to good ones, 90% bad,
they ruin
10%
your stuff.
Decent.
Yes.
So like finding the reliable
Regal
one
cleaner
is
was
key.
Good. I got dislocated some years back when the liquor store that I went to all the time changed ownership, and the new ownership, I just didn't know them in such a way. Now I'm great at Calvert Woodley, but a liquor store is also important.
Hugely important.
That's an important thing.
The dry cleaner is an intimate thing. Like all these other things, you can go find another one. It's still the same bottle of Kettle Vodka at a different liquor store. You might not like the service as much, but the dry cleaner, they're handling your stuff.
Yeah.
Like this is your stuff.
Intimately.
What other thing do you give as much stuff as intimate as something you wear?
I don't know.
You give
that
to someone on a regular
else.
Basis to handle.
It's a dilemma.
I mean, a bank is, when a bank closes, when you even go into that bank, and now you have to change your entire method of going to another bank in another place.
So it's kind of like if your massage parlor closed down.
You're now talking to a complete group of people who never walk into a bank.
Right.
So I mean,
you got to be old. You got to be old to care about a bank.
You have to walk into a dry cleaner. I can't slip my dry cleaning into the computer. I can do my banking right here. Thank you.
Right. So anyway, that was a big deal. So I turn on the TV the other night. Yep. Scherzer's on the DL.
Yeah, yes.
I turn on the TV the next night. Brian Goodwin's on the
DL.
They're
all on the DL.
And then is there any team in baseball with? And by the way, I remember watching when Jason Worth fouled the ball off his foot. That was 4 years ago.
Yeah, that was.
He's like not even in America. Where is this guy?
So he's,
how do so many people get hurt on that team?
Well, okay, I would say a couple things. Freakiness that people are hurt because they're with all these crazy, you know, Worth is a toe, Trey Turner's a wrist, Scherzer apparently is not taking
near. The Cubs last year had one injury, Kyle Schwarber, and he was back for the World Series. One injury.
Right, okay. So that leads me to, you know, I think everybody's kind of just assumed that this kind of quasi-juggernaut Nats team is going to win the National League East by a bazillion games because the National League East is terrible and there's no other contenders there. And they've been in first place from the beginning. They just have not been been out of the lead. But I do think that what you're talking about is an indication that, you know, Dusty Baker's doing a pretty good job and Mike Rizzo's doing a pretty good job of managing in-game and managing the roster. And Baker, even when guys are healthy, making sure, like, you're going to get a day. I know, Ryan Zimmerman, you hit two homers yesterday. Today is your scheduled day off. We're sticking to that. I think that's important. The other important thing is none of these people, other than Joe Ross, who wouldn't have been a factor in the playoffs most likely, is likely to be out on for their next important game. Their next important game is October 6th.
It's a playoff game. First playoff
Friday,
game.
Friday, October 6th at Nationals Park, almost certainly against the Cubs or, you know, whoever wins the Central. So this whole next 6 weeks is about, okay, Jason Worth and Trey Turner are playing for Syracuse tonight. Like, when are they going to come back? When does Scherzer only miss one or two starts? And can this full roster, which is an excellent full roster, be ready to compete on October 6th?
So which leads to this question for your hometown, John, the Los Angeles Dodgers, who now the other night lost their 10th game in 10 weeks.
They're 50-9 at one point.
How?
I mean, 50-9 is like a basketball record. You'd be like, this NBA team is a really good one
how
seed.
How great are they?
Okay, so they are great, and they are having a historic regular season. Kershaw is hurt. He's pitching a simulated game. They knew they were the best team. That didn't prevent them from adding Yu Darvish, from now adding Curtis Granderson to their lineup, a good postseason.
He's really good.
But there is, and this is to take nothing away from the excellent, excellent Dodgers, but postseason baseball, as we've discussed for years, is a crapshoot. Last year, the Cubs were the best team in baseball, and they won the World Series. They were also a couple of outs away from not winning the World Series.
Rare.
What the Dodgers are doing is really impressive, and they have great young players and a mix of older players. It's a great thing. It guarantees zero, and I would love to see.
Well, of course, the Nats have had no postseason success whatsoever.
Okay, but they have been the best team before and lost in five games.
Yes.
The 98 win team in 2012, they lost. They were the number one seed in 2014. They lost to the wild card winning San Francisco Giants. It's my view that last year's Nats loss to the Dodgers had a different feel than the first two playoff series that they played, in that they were much more competitive. They looked scared and tight in the first two playoff series that they played. Last year, I don't think that that was the case against the Dodgers. That it was a great series. It was five games. They needed Kershaw to come from the pen to nail that down. He was great. They had the at-bat against Murphy.
They lost
Murphy.
To Bumgarner in the same way.
You know, so that I think that this Nats team, if it's healthy and they play the Cubs, is better equipped than any Nats team that's gone in the postseason before. So we'll see.
Here's my question. The thing that has, to me, been impressive about the Nats, and I am not a Nats fan, but like the thing that's been impressive to me is that they've had all these injuries, right? And yet... And I'm a Dusty Baker fan, and I get the in-game managing thing. But the reality is they're still, like, the best or second-best offensive team in the National League.
So
how are they doing that with all these injured players? That's impressive.
I think speaks to some sort of, you know, Dusty's always going to be criticized for bullpen management or pitch handling of pitchers. Gio Gonzalez threw 121 pitches yesterday. Was that good, bad, indifferent? But you're exactly right. If you told me that Wilmer Defoe would have at this point, you know, 200 plate appearances or whatever it is that he has. He actually has 254 plate appearances at this point in August. I would say, oh my goodness, they're in trouble because he can't be exposed that way.
But he was good.
He's been good. Goodwin was good before he got hurt. Brian Goodwin, who is their third string center fielder because Eaton went down and then Taylor went down and Goodwin had to play all these times. He was good enough that Dusty was looking for a time to get him off and he had to play for 45 straight games and was good. The way they are really good is if you take those guys who, you know, kind of held things together and they become the bench for the postseason. And Howie Kendrick is your right-handed bat off the bench and Adam Lind is your left-handed bat off the bench. And now you've got a stout roster.
Need pitching.
Yeah, I mean.
Need pitching. Dodgers look really, really good.
Don't disagree.
They look really good. Okay, that was good.
That was.
All right, so we'll get out of here. Do we have email?
We have emails and a jingle.
An emails and a jingle when we return?
That's right.
Fabulous. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Hello, littles, and all of you. Here I am at Camp Kiyuma, it's a reunion, 60 years now. I had hair then and was not a millionaire then. Who are these old guys standing round me? Nothing in common anymore now. Should have never come to this thing. Could have golfed at Columbia and stayed for trivia. Wait a minute, there's free food now. There is wine and even parking. Having fun now, I can tell you. Tony, Michael, please don't disregard this jingle.
This is Brian from Oak Hill. Do I know Brian?
Brian Lapina.
He has my life down pat. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to John Hylam and Barry Sviluga for sitting in with me today on the show. Thanks as well to our own loyal little Noah Petro from NASA for calling in. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Upside.com and Simply Safe Home Security. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. What's fabulous is in every break, Heilman is consulting his phone. It's like Adam Schefter. Every time there's a break, anything that Schefter's on, he goes right to the phone.
I'm trying to make sure, trying to figure out how many reports of blindness have been reported over the course of the day. Right. I want to know whether Trump can still see after staring at the sun for 42 minutes. Right. And I'm worried about your son because he's in South Carolina. And
he'll be fine.
You know,
he'll be
fine. There's a bunch of people want to tear down statues down there, and they might try to tear down him. Who knows?
Did you sign up for more TV with that show that I like a lot?
Which
the
one?
Limited edition show about the election. What's the circus?
The circus.
The circus.
On
I like
Showtime.
That show a lot.
You like that show?
I do.
I think maybe if you're nice to me, we might bring it back next year.
I really like that show.
Season.
And I like Garcia's show, The Guest Book.
Oh, it's great,
which is twisted.
Both great shows. Yes. Yeah.
Garcia's show is utterly twisted.
TBS.
This is from Mike in Burke, Virginia. Did I hear you say that when you were a lad? This is regarding Bryce Harper getting hurt, that the bases were actual bags. They actually were. I'm sure that was the case on the prairie, Grandpa. I want to get to this. And that is, we didn't talk about this ever. You must have seen Bryce Harper run over first base and hurt his knee.
Yes.
How did he possibly get away without needing 12 operations on. Nobody flips like that and holds their knee like that and then walks away within 24 hours.
I think in the awkwardness of that moment, there is incredible athleticism from Harper.
And youth.
And like, you know, a body that has been worked on every day, you know, since he was 15 or something. But that was an amazing.
Yes.
I went to the park the next day thinking, well, Boz and I are both riding obits here somehow. Like, he's done.
When you see that, no matter when you see it, no matter how you know what happened and what didn't happen, when you see it and you see him flip like a cat and you see nothing but hair streaming all over the place and him grab his knee, you just, he's done.
Yeah, done. Like
that's Mickey Mantle falling into the drain at Yankee Stadium. That is the end of the most productive part of his career, and it's not.
It's as if like Joe Theismann gets hit by Lawrence Taylor and then comes back like the next
game.
And it's like, I'm fine.
Yes.
I'm all right. I'm good. No problem.
I don't know that even.
I stitched it up.
Wilbon, who loves the Cubs and as a result
hates
the Nats and hates Harper, even Wilbon said, oh my God, that was one of the worst things I'd ever seen.
Yes.
It's a non-collision.
Yeah.
Like, it's not football. It's a non-collision.
But you've seen guys blow out their knees in non-contact in football.
Of course,
The running back who cuts
them,
they just go down.
They go down.
These things go down.
But he tripped over something. Why are the bags so big? So thick.
Okay,
why?
So, I mean,
have you ever thought about that before this moment?
Yes.
No.
Never occurred to you before that the bags are too big.
They're like deep dish apple pies. They're gigantic.
Mike, except they're hard.
Chicago.
They're hard. Yeah. Mike Trout and Bryce Harper, and the two biggest best players in the sport, both were injured in bag incidents this year because Trout dove in. And there wasn't even a play and broke his messed up his thumb. They are affixed and secure in large part so that, like, if you're digging for a double, you're hitting something hard and moving on. I mean,
you
get the push off. You're not reaching for the old leather bag that's maybe half filled with sand.
Are you old enough to remember when bags were just like bags, canvas bags, and they were
barely
flat?
I assume
you're saying this is not done just for television.
No.
They're painted white and put rubber on them.
No. I mean, obviously, when they switch them out, you know, halfway through the game, that's for a kind of a vision thing. But no, there's a functionalness to them that they would change if there wasn't.
Probably be more dangerous to have the soft bag for a player who's like, you know, hit second base, trying to take the extra base. You hit that thing going full speed. You're more likely to mess your ankle up.
You round your ankle.
I'm not sure I've ever seen anything quite as frightening as this, and then to find out within 24 hours,
there's
no problem.
Bone bruise.
You know, no problem. I didn't do any of the email. We'll save them for the next time. If you're out here in bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white. Thank you for coming.
Don't do it, Tony.
When I look into the mirror, I see those haunted eyes. But you and I don't see the same. It's hard to make it up from the bottom with no one to pull you through. But don't give up, don't give up, don't give up on love. Whatever she did is forgotten. Whatever you lost can be found. This ain't the first time, it won't be the last. No good blues come around. I remember when Mr. Johnny Walker was the oldest man. Winter 2002. But don't give up, don't give up, don't give up on love. And I won't give up on you. Don't forget your way home.
mythology was made to stand alone. Magic's in the harmony. All Bill Withers sang "Lean On Me." Something you just can't seem to do. Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up on love. And I won't give up on you. I won't give up on you.
Don't give up on love.
Don't give it up.
Don't give up on love.
Don't give it up.
Don't give up on love.
Now, brothers and sisters, this here is a very simple song with a very simple sentiment. And what it's saying is, if you're ever feeling that pain and doubt in your heart, but don't give up on love. If it feels like you ain't got no more hope inside, don't give up on love. As long as you got a spark within you, don't give up on love. And it's never gonna give up on you, baby.
Come on, let's begin to be. think I'm good with that. So,
yeah.
Was it, did anybody hear anything that they were like, oh, no. Thank y'all so much. Yeah, so we're gonna take a little break. Feel free to get food. Thanks to Mama Mocha's for providing the coffee.